people think about surviving a natural disaster or a time of social unrest, like during a pandemic flu outbreak, they envision long lines of cars evacuating an area and complete panic and chaos. Now, there are definitely times when leaving your home is in your best interest, like maybe there's a fire headed your way or a flood or something like that, but in many instances, leaving your home may not be your best option, and in some cases, it may not even be an option at all. For example, what if you don't have reliable transportation to evacuate the area, and there are no provisions made by local government? What if you or a loved one are injured or unable to travel? Or what if the escape routes are literally parking lots from the mad dash of panicked neighbors desperately trying to leave? It's going to cause a complete meltdown of the transportation grid. It's in these instances, and any number of others, that those citizens who have mastered the skills to survive in place will prove to be the most prepared. And the purpose of this short interview is to give you some insight into just what it takes, both logistically and mentally, to be one of those few prepared. Hello, everyone. This is Jeff Anderson, President of the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants. And with me today is David Morris, one of our network experts specializing in training fellow preppers how to best be ready for a survival scenario when either you're unable to evacuate the area or you simply choose that staying put is a safer and more sustainable option. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me on today, Jeff.
I appreciate you taking the time. Now, listen, everybody. David has worked with military, law enforcement, private security contractors, medical professionals, survival, evasion, resistance, and escape experts, and even some of what he calls, quote-unquote, Pentagon friends, to create the ultimate urban survival guide that anyone can use to keep themselves and their loved ones safe in any sort of disaster. Now, for more information about David and his urban survival guide, please go to www.surviveinplace.com. And put the dashes in there, so it's www.survive-in-place.com. Now, David, what I did was I asked our readers and listeners for their number one question related to how to survive in place during a disaster. And I got to tell you, right now I'm looking at over 140 questions that may have been submitted to me. So obviously there's no way I'm going to be able to get to all of these. But what I'd like to do is ask you five of the most common and perhaps maybe the most important questions that were submitted and get your professional responses to them. So I want to dig right into it. The first one has to do with whether you should go about your preparation alone or not. So, David, should you choose to focus on your survival preparation plan individually, or should you organize ahead of time a team of friends and neighbors who you can band with to help each other out in a crisis? And if so, how do you go about recruiting and organizing them?
That's a great question, and it's one of the big questions or concerns that people have, obviously, from your experience with asking it on your blog. But I go into depth about building mutual aid teams in the course, but I want to cover some of the high points here. And an easy way to answer it, and actually several other prioritization questions, is by looking at preparedness like you would building a house. And if you just want to throw up a hasty shelter, you really don't need to do a lot of planning. It won't weather storms, and it won't last very long, but it will give you some basic protection for the short term. But if you want something that's going to last your entire lifetime, you need to do proper planning, lay a solid foundation that will support the structure, and plan out things like plumbing and electrical in advance. So if we kind of build off of that example, the individual is going to be the foundation of any mutual aid group. If you do it the other way around and spend time getting together a group of like-minded people who haven't done anything to prepare yet, it's kind of like building a straw house. It's just not going to last. But if you take that same time and get yourself squared away first with basic shelter, fire, water, food, medical, and security skills and supplies, then when you actually go out and start building your mutual aid group, you'll have a solid foundation in place already. Now, another big reason that you want to do personal preparedness before group preparedness is to use it as a test. And here's what I mean. Let's say you get together with five other families and decide to get prepared together. 3 months later, you've got two of the families who have all of their basic supplies for surviving 6 months. One family has a couple of months taken care of, and the other two families just have a couple extra boxes of mac and cheese. But here's the big but on this. the two families that haven't actually done anything know exactly whose house to go to if something happens and their kids are hungry. By building your group before anyone in the group is taking care of themselves, you've really placed an unnecessary target on yourself and anyone else who actually takes steps to get prepared. As far as the unprepared people in your group, you don't know who they're going to talk with about your group, and you don't know who they'll bring with them when they're looking for food. They just aren't going to have as much incentive to keep your group a secret since they don't have any supplies that they risk getting stolen or looted. Now, let's back up and take a look at the individual side of it. And really, you want to look at it like building a house also. And there's some basic skills and items that you want to have to build a solid preparedness foundation before going ahead and working on advanced skills. And I'll give you a couple of examples. One basic is that you want to have food and water to last you a month or even a year before you go out and buy a generator and solar combo, a bank of deep cycle batteries, and a heavy-duty inverter to run all the electrical appliances in your house. It's just, if you have a choice between surviving with one and not the other, you obviously need food and water before you need a generator. And another example is, it has to do with empty hand skills and firearms. And of course, everyone wants to have a firearm for self-defense, and I solidly agree with that. But you need to have a solid empty hands defense base before spending time and money on firearms, ammo, training, range time, and storage. And the reason for this is pretty simple and pretty obvious. You'll always have the empty hand skills. You'll always have those with you. But firearm skills depend on you having your firearm with you when you need it. And even if you do have your firearm, you might have to fight with your hands to be able to get to your firearm to even use it. So once you do have the basics taken care of, and again, it's shelter, fire, water, food, medical, and security, then it's time to go ahead and start thinking about creating your mutual aid team. And this can be a tricky process. And when you think about it, it's a lot like hiring an employee, going into a business partnership, or getting married. And kind of like with those, especially marriage, almost all marriages are made to last, but over half still end in divorce. So the mutual aid team that you start out with, especially once you start getting into 6, 10, 12-person groups, it's probably going to be a little bit fluid. The people who are in it this year may not be the ones who are in it next year or 5 years from now. Now, what I teach my students in the course is to just go slowly. Become friends first. If you think that you found someone dependable, start doing activities together that are slightly stressful to see how well you can work together under stress. These could be as simple as backpacking or playing paintball, or it could be going on vacations together. You don't want it to be an interview process, but at the same time, you've got a goal in mind. You've got a goal in mind of creating a mutual aid group. You don't want to make them feel like they're being interviewed or anything. It's just be natural about it. Just you're making friends, and if things progress, then you might ask them to be part of a mutual aid group with you.
Got it.
On that, remember that the only way to be sure that a secret is kept is to have only one person know it. So try not to disclose too much of your preparations too early. And don't feel like you need to disclose everything to people, even on your mutual aid team. So if you also need to keep in mind, and you can look back to New Orleans to see this, if a survival situation develops before you have your team in place, others on your street and your neighborhood will want to band together to protect your neighborhood from outsiders. Like I said, it happened in New Orleans after Katrina, and the neighborhoods where it happened became incredibly close, and they're still close to this day.